Here we go.
Thank you. My name is Philip Turner, members of the court, counsel. And I'm honored to have the chance to represent Mr. Brosh. On the 9th, we mailed the court some supplemental authority in case you didn't get it. It says Mr. Brosh has been paroled. Just wanted to be sure the court was aware of that. The question before you today is a straightforward one. Whether or not under Criminal Rule 35B, the court may reconsider the SVP or sexually violent predator designation, which translates to whether or not, for the purposes of that rule only, the phrase sentence encompasses the designation of sexually violent predator. We believe that is, in fact, just what it means, and the trial court disagreed. That's why we're here. There are a number of reasons why we believe we're correct and the trial court ruled erroneously. First, it's important to note that a number of cases have, when passing on sexually violent predator designations, and there has been a spate of these over the last 5 years, they routinely refer to this as part of the sentence. For example, in the Hunter case, the court wrote, for the purposes of sentencing under the SVP statute, and they went on to address the issue. In the Gallegos case, the court stated that part of the sentence, and then they went on to discuss that part of the sentence that referred to the SVP designation.
Is that an issue in those cases, or as to whether it was part of the sentence?
It wasn't as issue as sharply. It wasn't as precisely framed as it is here, of course. But the sheer number of those, I think, is important. The next one is the Tuffo case, which I think I've talked about in some detail in my brief, where they rephrased, they talked about sentencing matters. It's no accident that.
Try that again.
I'm sorry if I
system malfunction. We're good now.
The Tuffo case teaches, and it's no surprise, that there's a due process component to the designation of an SVP. While we have the Roland case that said there's no statutory entitlement to a hearing, in this case there was a hearing, although, like a sentencing, it was done without any attention to the rules of hearsay. No evidence was presented. The lawyers just made comments. The important thing to remember is that the courts have consistently treated these hearings as if they were part of sentencings. For example, as I said, hearsay is permissible. The government can only prove its position by a preponderance of the evidence. They can rely upon the probation report and its appendages, such as the offense-specific report and the sexually violent predator assessment form. In fact, they're almost required to go at least that far. In this case, true to form, the prosecution below presented nothing more than the probation report and that report. The finding has to be endorsed upon the minimus pursuant to the sexually violent predator statute. The minimus, of course, is the sentencing document. And all of this is done by the sentencing court as part of the sentencing process. I analogize in our pleadings to restitution. And I pointed out to you the cases that show that if the court fails to impose restitution, the sentence is illegal because it's incomplete. Very similar wording is found in the sexually violent predator statute. Thereby, I think you can easily find that it was everyone's intent to include sexually violent predator as part of the sentence when the SVP statute was passed several years ago. Now, in the Tuffo case, they were presented with an interesting factual conundrum. In Tuffo, in the Tuffo case, the defendant appeared at sentencing, the court said we need to address the SVP designation. And much like in this case, the trial court said, well, we're going to take that up on another day. Or actually in Tuffo, the defense lawyer said, I'd like to take it up on another day. The trial court then went ahead and said, I'll make the designation now and we'll deal with that later. On appeal, the appellate court was faced with the problem that if the notice of appeal was due 45 days after the sentencing, they had to determine when that occurred. And they found that there was an oral motion to reconsider the sexually violent predator designation, that it was made right at the time of sentencing, and therefore the hearing that didn't occur till 7 months later was a appealable event, and the clock for filing the notice didn't start to run until that latter hearing. They even used the word reconsideration in that opinion. We are, of course, aware, I think it's Gallegos and other cases, well, at least Gallegos, where they sort of quickly march past this whole argument, and the court says, you know, if we let you come back and argue SVP whenever you chose, we'd never see the end of this.
Also, on that point, your client had an opportunity to challenge his SVP designation on direct appeal. Why should he get a second bite at the apple?
Because it's part of the sentence, and he's entitled to do that based on the change in the underlying science. Much like if he appealed the sentence and could come back on a 35B motion after the sentence appeal.
Are you saying that every person that's now incarcerated that had some sort of SVP designation, if the either the screening criteria or the, you know, the documentation that the social scientists rely upon, if that changes, they all get a right to come back and get a redo?
No, only if they're within the 120-day limit of the motion to reconsider under Rule 35B. That's where my client is, and he made heroic efforts to get this before the court using that mechanism, as we've outlined in the pleadings. The alternative is to say, well, we'll just disregard the science. I mean, the earth is flat, and we're never going to change our mind. And that, of course, is not what the courts seek to do. And if you look at the first Bosch appellate opinion, the court said, there's a standardized evaluation. The statute teaches us that it has to be revised as necessary, that the research must be considered. The court relied on the handbook, the 2008 version. We're asking you to consider the 2010 version. The court in Brosh 1 talked about the importance of the trial court's deference to a trained evaluator and the evaluation that evaluator put together using the evaluator's expertise. All of those things put us in a rather odd place. It's not a change in the law. It is more a change in the science. And of course we want to adopt good science. We no more want to tag people as SVPs who are inappropriately tagged than we want to exonerate those who should be appropriately tagged as the science evolves. That handbook teaches us, in fact, that when they first did it, when the statute was first passed in the late 1990s, there was almost no research, and they had to start from scratch. And the 2010 version is a much more precise and much less subjective evaluative process. That August 2010 release happened while the direct appeal was going on. And Mr. Brosh should, and the people should welcome the chance to use the new evaluation, to use good science, so that we don't inappropriately tag somebody, and equally so we don't miss somebody who should be tagged. I think Brosh won strongly demonstrates the importance of the science.
By that same reasoning then to sentencing, you know, term in prison and say, well, we have better science with regard to rehabilitation and we should go in under Rule 35B and allow the sentence to be reconsidered in light of new brain science, newer neuroscience?
Of course. I think if a lawyer appeared at a 35B hearing where the motion was timely and presented compelling new evidence to the court about why the science of the sentence should be different, whether it's a mistake in the criminal history from the original computation all the way to the other extreme, the example you've just offered, any good judge is going to consider that. And again, it's not for this court to command the lower court to do anything except acknowledge the legal ability to do what we're advocating here. The final decision remains in the discretion of the Rule 35B court, provided it follows the appropriate analysis. Let me turn very briefly to my other issue, which is what happened on the 35B in a more global sense. We believe that the trial court misapprehended its authority. In the briefs have gone back and forth on this. The key cases are Piotrowski, which the trial court relied on, followed by Lamula, and then finally Grist, where the Supreme Court, we believe, clarified all this. There is no issue of separation of powers. That has been resolved. The court has authority under Rule 35B to alter the sentence and retains that authority provided the motion is timely filed, reasonably pursued and not abandoned, and ruled upon in a reasonably prompt fashion. All of those things happen here. I think that's even unchallenged. The trial court's order, I will concede, is not a model of clarity, but the 10th and 11th paragraphs in particular show the trial court agrees that it believed it had lost authority and the executive had taken over. I would point to the transcript of the status hearing in November of 2010, where the court offered the same opinion. So this was not, it is not just the bare document. You have the court's comments to counsel many months earlier. And with that, I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you very much.
May it please the court. Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Majid Yazdi, registration 36043, representing the people in this case. The starting point in addressing the question raised here is not what is the best policy to deal with sexual offenders, determination of whether, you know, what the science tells us in terms of SVP status. The starting point, rather, is focusing on the rules that have been adopted to address specific motions. 35B, in terms of its language and purpose, is very clear. It is a procedure to address reduction of sentence. That is very specific in terms of what we are dealing with. We are dealing with the terms, you know, sentence that can be reduced. And the focus is supposed to be on the fairness of the sentence. Neither reduction of the sentence nor focusing on the fairness has anything to do with SVP designation, which has its own separate procedure. As many courts have recognized, SVP designation is a collateral consequence of conviction, which is different from punishment imposed by the sentence.
Also, but doesn't that designation have consequences just like any other sentencing provision? For example, if the court ordered that, you know, defendant not have contact with a certain person, I mean, that would be part of the sentence, wouldn't it?
Your Honor, several courts have addressed that in terms of not only the purpose of SVP designation, but its effects. For example, community notification, internet posting, and those cases have specifically concluded that those are not punishments. Those are goals for the security of safety of society and helping law enforcement accomplish their objective of reducing the risk to society. So in terms of being punishment, the cases are clear that SVP designation is not a form of punishment. And for the purpose of ex post facto analysis or Apprendi-Blakely analysis, again, we have case law in Colorado that those that SVP designation is not part of sentencing for that purpose. So it is clear that we are dealing with something other than punishment, and it has consequences, but those are collateral consequences, but not punishments specifically under sentencing. The TOEFL case, of course, is a very unusual case, as the court, the opinion acknowledges. It is not considered a model for addressing these issues, and it has its own unique circumstances because in the hearing, original sentencing hearing, defense counsel raised the issue of challenging SVP designation, and the court agreed, using its discretion, to address that at a later hearing. And that's also an important point, that whereas sentencing requires hearing and the defendant is entitled to a hearing, SVP designation does not require hearing. It is discretion of the court to base its decision on the reports produced by the board and the division, or hold a hearing to further inquire about the proper designation. But in this case, in Toffolo, the court decided to allow the defendant to raise the same issue later on, although it is characterized as reconsideration. But it was clear from the beginning that the court was not even making a final decision on SVP designation to reconsider it later on. It was just giving more time to the defendant. And at a later time, 7 months later, when the court, when the defendant raised it, as the opinion emphasizes, neither the court nor the prosecution objected to that. So that lack of objection was part of the reasoning of the court in allowing it to be considered as still within the time for appealing that designation. In short, the only question is whether 35B, given its language, given its purpose, allows the defendant to raise SVP designation under that motion, filed under 35B motion. And as I have argued, 35B motion is designed to address reduction of sentence and focusing on the fairness of the sentence. And neither of those two has anything to do with SVP designation. Based on these, it is our position that the court made proper ruling in interpreting 35B and denying defendant's motion for reconsideration of SVP designation under that motion. As far as the court's general ruling on 35B, whether the court understood its authority and its discretion, it is clear in the decision, and as I have argued in the brief, that the court was fully aware that 35B allows the court to reconsider the motion for reconsidering the sentence, not the SVP designation. And the question of any issue of separation of powers, that's not what the court used to not grant the 35B motion. The court addressed the merits of the motion and then denied it based on its conclusions. Unless the court has any question, we ask this court to affirm the court's order.
Mr. Yasny.
Just briefly, if I may, the Rowland opinion identified a number of things that are visited upon a defendant who receives an SVP designation. One is the restriction on where he lives. Another is the impact on parole eligibility. A third is the cost of notification, which he bears. A fourth is the obvious social pariah consequences that go with the label. The literature is replete with references to someone being, quote, dangerous, unquote, if they carry this designation. The mere words themselves are enough that the statute said, we are aware that the General Assembly is, of the possibility for vigilantism, and it's not our desire to encourage that, but they felt the need to put into statute their fear that it might happen. The community notification is an oppressive process for an individual, not to mention the people in the community who can be scared by it. And then there's the internet listing, which is different. So there are a number of consequences that go with this. And it's a lifetime designation. As we read the statute, this is the only chance for the individual to revisit it. And frankly, the window should be greater to allow for the change in science, but that's someone else's problem on another day. Your Honor.
Question.
Could you just
run through what it is, what evidence there is that your client would have, that that new science would be beneficial.
Right. They dramatically rewrote the questionnaire. And in the brief, I went through it line by line and showed how my client would not be labeled an SVP because it's a whole different set of questions. And when you score him, which you can do from the record, doesn't take a lot of difficulty, he almost certainly comes out as not a sexually violent predator. There are things like his prior criminal history, whether he has an appropriate education and so forth. Those were not in the original version or the version that was used. So there's every reason to believe he would prevail if this makes its way back to the trial court. And if it does, it would be our intention to get a professional to do the appropriate document, not rely on my research, and present it to the trial court and let them decide whether it's enough to change their mind. Because the ultimate decision is the trial judge's. And that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. And again, that was very helpful. This case also now stands submitted. We will issue an opinion in due course.